Call this meeting of the House Community and Regional Affairs Committee to order. Let the record reflect that it is 1:55 p.m. on Monday, May 16th, 2022. I want to thank our House Record Secretary, Lori Rowland, and also our LIO moderator, the one and only Kelsey Riker, for all their behind-the-scenes work here on the committee. As we start, I want to remind committee members to please silence their cell phones as I do the same thing. And present today, we have Representatives McCarty, Puckettock, McCabe, Prox, Co-Chair Hannon, myself, Co-Chair Schrage, and we've just been joined by Representative Drummond as well. Thank you. The committee will be considering one bill today, Senate Bill 136, Limitations on Firearms Restrictions. And before we jump into the bill, I'm going to open public testimony, as we have not done so yet for this bill, and opening public testimony. All right, we've got a number of testifiers lined up today. I'm going to ask all those providing public testimony to limit themselves to 3 minutes, and I will have a timer going, and I will do my best to give you a 30-second warning so you can wrap up if you have comments that are running long. First up for public testimony today, we have Ann Gifford, looks like of Juneau. If you could please put yourself on the record by stating your name, location, any affiliation that you want to reference, and then proceed with your testimony. You have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair Schrage, and thank you, other committee members, for the opportunity to testify. My name is Ann Gifford. I'm a retired lawyer, a mother, and a grandmother from Juneau, and I'm here representing myself today. I'm asking you not to pass SB 136 because it would tie the hands of our governor and local officials when they need to respond to natural disasters and other emergencies. And my concern is that it's very hard to know ahead of time exactly what kind of rules we're going to need to maintain order and protect public safety in these times of emergency. But we do know that there can be so much damage after something like an earthquake or a flood that it's necessary to take measures like imposing curfews or restricting people's access to certain areas to do things like prevent looting. And we also know that there can be a need to set up temporary shelters and things like soup kitchens and field hospitals. And limiting people's ability to carry or use firearms in these types of places can be necessary to keep people safe. These are the types of time and place restrictions on Second Amendment rights that courts have recognized as constitutional. And so if we take the authority away from our leaders to impose temporary restrictions like this in times of emergency, I believe that we're likely to regret it later. So please do not vote to approve this bill. Thanks for the opportunity to testify, and thank you for your service to our state.
Thank you, Ms. Gifford, and thank you for remaining under the 3 minutes. Next up, we're going to go to Patty Owen. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you want to mention, you'll have 3 minutes. Please proceed.
Hi, co-chairs Schrage and Hannon and members of the committee. My name is Patty Owen. I'm a lifelong Alaskan and mother and grandmother living in Juneau. I'm representing myself today, and I am in strong opposition to SB 136. During a declared disaster in Alaska, the primary focus should be on protecting public safety, not limiting the state and local government's ability to respond and maintain safety and order. It's time the legislature passed common sense gun safety laws that save lives instead of prioritizing gun sales during a disaster when capacity and authority for full-scale emergency response should take precedence. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. And it looks like we have a question from Representative McCabe, if you're able to stay on the line and answer, if you wish.
Okay.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Ms. Owen. I appreciate your testimony, and I'm curious, do you own any guns?
No, I don't.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you again, Ms. Owen. Next up for public testimony today, we have Laura Fleming. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference, and you have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Hello. Thank you, Chair Shragi, Chair Hannon, members of the committee. My name is Laura Fleming, and I live in Juneau, and appreciate the opportunity to testify on Senate Bill 136, Limitations on Firearms Restrictions. As Alaskans, we really do appreciate the importance of being able to freely own and safely use firearms. This bill seems aimed at solving a problem that does not exist in our state or in our communities. Our state constitution has a really strong executive as one of its core principles, and this bill seeks to erode that executive's authority. Further, it seems it would clip the wings of the very officials at the state and local levels charged with ensuring our public safety at the time when they most would need to freely exercise their authority in a disaster and emergency environment. It really seems like this proposal offers a solution for a problem that doesn't exist. And there are so many real problems that you must address on behalf of your constituents. I thank you for your hard work in doing that and suggest that this bill remain on the table. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'd be happy to answer any questions that you may have. And guns in our house are locked up in a safe.
Okay. Thank you very much, Ms. Fleming. I believe we do have a question for you from Representative McCabe, if you're willing. Please, Representative McCabe.
Through the chair. So you use your guns for hunting, Ms. Fleming?
My husband does.
Okay. Thank you.
And, you know, sometimes I go to the range and, you know, make sure I know how to use them. But I'm not much of a hunter.
Well, you're going to have a gun. You better know how to use it. So good.
That's right. If you're going to be in the house, everyone should know how to use it.
That's how to do it safely is go to the range, right?
Couldn't agree more.
That's right.
Thank you, Ms. Fleming. Really appreciate your public testimony today. All right. Next up, we have, I hope I'm saying your name correctly, Luann McVeigh. If you could please put yourself on the record, name, location, any affiliation you wish to reference, and proceed with your testimony of 3 minutes.
Hi, this is Luann McVeigh. Can you hear me?
We can hear you loud and clear. Please proceed.
Thank you. And thank you for taking my testimony. I really appreciate it, and I appreciate all the time that you folks spend on hearings like these. I think it's important for you to hear from your constituents. I am a retired Alaskan teacher, and I'm a mom, and I'm a grandmother, and I'm opposed to SB 136, and I urge you not to allow this unnecessary and potentially harmful bill to pass out of your committee. I can't understand the reasoning behind prohibiting the governor or a state agency or a municipality from taking action during a declared disaster emergency that would restrict the possession, use, or sale of a firearm or other weapons, including not allowing the temporary closure of gun stores or gun ranges during a declared disaster. In a disaster emergency, emotions tend to run hot, and our leaders might find it necessary to restrict gun possession use or sales in order to limit the chaos that can erupt when angry people have easy access to firearms. I believe in the ability of our elected leaders to decide when such limits are necessary. Please do not take away a tool that could be used for constructive purposes to disarm those who might cause harm to others. Guns aren't the answer to human strife, especially during a declared disaster emergency. I hope you will prevent this bill from passing out of your committee. And thank you for hearing my testimony.
Thank you very much, Ms. Luann or McVeigh. And we do have a question from Representative McCabe. I suspect I know the question, but Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Ms. McVeigh. I'm wondering if you or your family own guns and if you use them for hunting or defense or what you use them for.
Yes, we have two rifles in the house, and they are hunting rifles, one of which was inherited by my husband from his brother who passed away recently. And I don't use them myself, but my husband uses them only for hunting.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Ms. McVeigh. We appreciate your testimony here today. And for the rest of the testifiers, I suspect we'll be getting that same question over and over again. So if you wouldn't mind just maybe preceding that question, letting us know whether or not you own a gun, if you wish, just so we can avoid maybe the back and forth. Representative McKee.
Brief at ease.
Brief at ease. Record. And next up, we have Avine Klein, State Director of the NRA. If you could please put yourself on the record, name, location, any affiliations other than the NRA that you wish to reference, and proceed with your testimony of 3 minutes.
Good afternoon, Co-Chairs Shragi and Hannon. For the record, my name is Avine Klein, State Director for the National Rifle Association. Thank you for the opportunity to provide testimony on this NRA priority piece of legislation. Senate Bill 136 seeks to place limitations on firearms restrictions by state and municipal agencies during disaster emergency declarations. Senate Bill 136 does not prevent the closure, but it simply states that firearms-related businesses cannot be singled out. The NRA has provided written testimony as well as an addendum to questions by committee members from the April 28th hearing. At the core of the Second Amendment is the right to self-defense. The importance of this right is elevated in times of chaos, uncertainty, and emergencies. Alaskans must be able to access firearms, ammunition, shooting ranges, and other essential firearms-related businesses during this time of emergency. I'll keep my comments short and stay on the line for any questions. Thank you for the time, and I urge a due pass recommendation.
Thank you very much for your testimony. Next up on the phone, we have Marion Klo. I hope I'm saying your name correctly. If you could state your name, location, any affiliation you want to reference, and proceed with your testimony, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you, Co-Chair and members of the committee. Can you hear me okay? I'm Marion Klo. I'm from Hawke Bay, Alaska, but I'm actually in a car right now driving to Pennsylvania.
We can hear you okay, Marion. Please proceed.
Okay. I oppose SB 136. I'm a grandmother and a gun owner, and I'm testifying for myself. I support the right to bear arms, but I don't see why requiring gun stores and shooting ranges be allowed to stay open during a disaster declaration makes anyone safer. This bill sets up individuals or interest groups to act as the legal enforcers of this state law through civil suits. It is made even more egregious by mandating that a prevailing party or plaintiff would be due punitive damages of a minimum of 3 times their actual attorney fees, plus repayment of court and attorney fees. Our attorney general is here to enforce our state laws. This provision encourages more politicized litigation at a time we need less. Thank you for taking my testimony, and I can give you a list of the guns that we own. They're used for hunting, outdoor recreation, and self-protection. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Appreciate your public testimony. Next up, we have Janice Caulfield. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference, you have 3 minutes.
Thank you very much. This is Janice Caulfield. I'm representing myself today. I live in Juneau. I want to thank the co-chairs and the members of the committee for taking public testimony today on this topic. I'm an Alaska resident for 43 years. My family does own guns for hunting, both a rifle and a shotgun. You know, we keep those stored, locked, as all guns should be, to ensure our safety and safety of anyone who comes in our home. I'm a mother of 2 young adult children and a small business owner, and I am calling to oppose SB 136. Alaska is subject to any numbers of types of natural disasters, as we all know, earthquakes, tsunamis, volcanoes, you know, we've kind of got it all. And a time of disaster, you know, is a time when life and business does not proceed as usual, and it's not possible to predict all the situations that might require action by our elected officials and law enforcement to protect public safety. I think that during an emergency, the focus should be on actions that protect public safety, not on limiting state and local government's powers to maintain order and keep us safe. We give leaders special powers in disaster situations because they have to be able to consider, you know, the circumstances, what's happening, and then take prompt and decisive actions to protect us and others. For example, it might be important to limit possession or use of firearms in certain areas to prevent them from being stolen, or to ensure safety in public shelters that are managed by the military, you know, or a government agency or the Red Cross. And SB 136 seems to prevent, you know, even law enforcement from taking these common sense steps to provide for public safety and ensure the peace, and to be able to, you know, respond to situations as they are evolving on the ground. So it isn't clear at all to me how this law makes Alaskans safer during a disaster. As others have said, I just don't see a problem that this is intending to fix. And there are a lot more pressing issues that I think we need to address in our state than this one. So I appreciate the opportunity to testify and for you listening to those of us who are calling in. Thanks very much.
Thank you for your public testimony, and I believe Representative McCabe has a question for you, if you're willing.
Sure.
Representative McCabe?
So, yes, ma'am, you said you do have guns, correct?
Yes, a rifle and a shotgun.
Yeah, that's right, and you have a couple of young adult children, so I'm curious.
Well, they're not living in my home any longer, but yes.
Okay, disregard. Thank you.
Sorry.
Thank you very much for your public testimony. We appreciate you being online today. Next up, we have Rochelle Parker. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference. You have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you very much. My name is Rochelle Parker, and I'm a constituent from Anchorage, speaking out against Senate Bill 136. I am not personally a gun owner, but I'm a mother of three young children. I'm actually calling you from an elementary school parking lot because I wanted to make sure I was able to speak out against this bill today. I read in the national news this morning that it's 19 weeks into the year and America has already seen 198 mass shootings capped by the horrific shooting in Buffalo, New York this weekend. And if Alaska were to enter into a state of emergency for whatever reason, we should focus on creating and enforcing policies that make us safer instead of blindly promoting more access to firearms in potentially dangerous situations to people who may be emotionally unstable in those dangerous situations. So like so many other people have said, I feel like this bill is unnecessary and could potentially cause a lot of damage if it advances. I urge you to vote down this bill. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much for your public testimony. We appreciate it. Next up for public testimony online, we have Joy Lyon. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference. You have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Good afternoon. Thank you, co-chairs and members of the committee. My name is Joy Lyon. I'm here in Juneau. I'm a mom, grandma, and gun owner, so to say. And my whole family went to a two-day gun safety course at Front Sight. And I really wish that all gun owners, you know, took gun safety classes because that really prepares people to, you know, use them responsibly. And unfortunately, that isn't the case. In an emergency situation, you know, having people that haven't had any experience with guns or any training whatsoever, you know, at large, doesn't seem like a public health and safety wise move. So I'm totally opposed to Senate Bill 136. I think in a disaster situation, you want to give local control to people on the ground that have, you know, they're able to make decisions and not fearing for civil litigation later on, which could really be crippling for smaller communities, especially for smaller municipalities. let's just imagine you have some, you know, gang activity in an urban area or a Hatfield McCoy kind of situation, and the local government says that they're not going to allow firearms in the emergency shelter, then they could later be sued. And that's, it's not setting up anyone for, you know, increased safety in a disaster when really we need to have our local officials be able to make those quick decisions on the ground. So I really don't see a need for this. It already is on the laws that, that the sufficient laws already that address this issue. So I urge you to deny this bill. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Lyon. Appreciate your public testimony, and I believe Representative McCabe has a question for you. Representative McCabe?
Thanks, Ms. Lyon. More of a comment. I just want to thank you for taking the time to go to Front Sight. My wife and I have been there, and they're very good at instructing, including when you can and cannot use your gun, when you can pull it out, when you can't pull it out. I'm sure you remember the testimony or the instruction from the legal experts that told you that if you pulled your gun out and you actually went after somebody with your gun, they told you all of the amount of money and how much it would cost you for a lawyer and pretty much all the laws, as many as they could fit in there, of what was going to happen. So I really do appreciate that there are people like you. We need maybe more of those kinds of facilities around that could instruct us. So anyways, I just wanted to say thanks and sort of relate that I've been there too.
Maybe there's a field trip.
I hope you passed your final exam and the mock setup in the house situation. That was intense, but thank you.
Love it. Very good. Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Lyon. We appreciate it. Next up, we have Emily Kane. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference and proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes.
Hi.
And Ms. Kane, you're cutting out just a little bit. I don't know if you're able to maybe step outside very quickly. You want to try again?
Okay. Can you hear me now?
Much better. Thank you, Ms. Kane.
Great. This is Dr. Emily Kane. I've been a family doc in Juneau for 30 years. I'm a mother. I do not own a gun. I appreciate the opportunity to give testimony, and I thank you all for continuing to hear bills during these final hours. I strongly urge you to shut down this bill right now. Allowing for easier access to firearms cannot possibly render Alaskans safer during a time of disaster or emergency. Disaster and emergency situations are by nature unpredictable. I personally do not want untrained gunmen shooting and looting during a time when civic management by government officials could be of utmost importance. Just want to say further that my closest friend lost her son just before his 15th birthday to a senseless gunshot wound, and his death would have been prevented if the gun owner had securely stored their weapon. Please focus on passing sensible, safe storage and red flag laws to protect our good people against this plague of gun violence, which is a scourge on our society. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Kane, and not seeing any questions for you. We're going to take a quick break from online testimony and go to in-the-room testimony. Mr. Sonnen, John Sonnen, I believe, if you could please come up to the table here, put yourself on the record with your name and any affiliation you wish to reference, and proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Thank you, Commander, Chief,
Co-Chair.
Commander in Chief is probably a good one. We're all chiefs. We're all chiefs, I think. And that's the problem. When you, I'm John Sonnen. I live over on Douglas, and I started doing Alaska for the last 25 years, in Juneau for at least 22, I think. We all will be acting like, our own sheriffs. With or without an emergency, I think, because the proliferation of firearms around this country right now has just gone berserk. On the issue of emergency declarations and preventing the closure of gun ranges and stores, I think the Hatfield-McCoy reality is nearly upon us. And in the emergency situation, the strayed emotions would make it an actuality, I think, where people will just end up feuding. There won't be any civil construction left. Our whole purpose of this nation is to form a more perfect union. And when you have everyone pretending they're the sheriff, they have their own sense of justice, and everyone does have their own. It's only the laws that makes it, the laws we have that makes it something we can agree on. running around deciding that the guy shut down his gun store because he had a flood in the basement or something, and that night can be sued. It's just depicts to me the ludicrousness of this bill. I think it has no place in the end of the session. Your mind should be on supporting Alaska, not on dismembering. And that's what this bill will do. Break this union we seek into smithereens, into a shatter. Thanks.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Sonnen. Not seeing any questions. I think next up, thank you again, Mr. Sonnen. We appreciate you being here. All right. Next up on the line, we have Sue Libinson. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference. Proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes.
Hello, my name is Sue Liebenson. I'm calling from Haines, Alaska. And I am mystified by this bill. And I am calling in opposition. And I mean, I don't know how many disasters you've responded to, but I just, in my short life, I've had the pleasure of responding to the Exxon Valdez oil spill. And then, of course, in Haines, we had the great landslide and rain event up here, and we were not concerning ourselves with the government shutting down guns. And we were busy getting hundreds of volunteers to show up for search and rescue and moving seniors out of flooded areas and making sure everyone was fed and getting people from their homes. I mean, this is just absurd that we have to spend time on this, and especially in an era with so much gun violence. And what we've learned, thanks to Mr. McCabe, is yes, we are a heavily armed state. We do not have a problem with there not being enough guns in people's homes. We could use some gun safety, quite frankly, to prevent the high level of suicides and other issues and as Dr. Kane said, just violence that is so preventable. So I just really think this is a red flag that you're just waving to rally some unknown cause. And in the event of actual emergencies, the good news is Alaskans know how to support each other. We don't need a bill like this. And, I thank you for your time. And in terms of my experience with guns, yes, we have guns. Yes, I have been part of a community that was subject to a mass shooting. So I would say, quite frankly, yeah, I am quite emotional at this point. What I learned from being part of a community subject to a massacre was that so many other people are in that situation, because so many people came up to me and said, oh, I was in a similar situation. So I know I'm mixing issues here, but raising flags for no reason is just very upsetting to me at this time. So thank you for allowing me to testify, and thank you for moving on to other priorities.
Thank you for your testimony, Ms. Libinson. We'll have a question from Representative McCabe, and if you'd like to answer that, you can stay online. Representative McCabe, a question?
Thanks, Ms. Levinson, and thanks for your service on the Exxon Valdez. I was one of the very first air taxi airplanes over top of that disaster when it happened, so I can attest that that was a huge natural disaster. So I just have two questions. Is there any gun stores in Haines? And I'm just asking because I don't really know.
Ms. Libinson, do you care to respond?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yes.
Okay, and so second question is, I know in Juneau there's a large number of bears because I've run into them in my apartment in the middle of downtown rooting through the garbage cans. So I assume that Haines also has a pretty decent population of black bears and dogs as well. Is that are brown bears?
Yeah, we've got dogs, cats, bears, the whole thing. Okay. You don't need a bill of this nature.
Thank you.
And this is, I don't know where this line is going. Thank you for your time. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Libinson. We appreciate you being online to provide your testimony. Next up, we're actually going to take a very brief at ease, and we'll be right back. Brief at ease. Record and continuing with public testimony. Thanks for your patience, everyone. Next up, hopefully I'm pronouncing your name correctly, I've got Layla Berberovic. Excuse me. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, any affiliation you wish to reference, and proceed with your testimony. You will have 3 minutes.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call. Good afternoon. My name is Layla Berberovic. I'm calling from Anchorage on behalf of myself. I'm a social worker who works at the Native Hospital in the ER and have worked over 7 years. I was here, so I see a lot of patients who are suicidal, and I see a lot of patients in general with mental health issues. Also, I was here during the big earthquake a couple years back or a few years back. I don't see the reason for this bill, as people have previously testified. I think Alaskans come together to help each other out. I think our leadership does and our government does a pretty good job of taking care of us. And I don't see a reason why we should have more restrictions and really pay attention to this. So I vote against, or my suggestion is that you vote against SB 136. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. We appreciate it. And Representative McCarty.
Hello, Layla. This thanks for testifying. Are you part of any disaster team for Anchorage or the state?
Can you hear me?
We can hear you. Please.
Oh, great. After what had happened, I did sign up for a local Anchorage team, but luckily we have not been needed since the earthquake necessarily. During the pandemic, like I said, I work in the ER, and I've been in the ER from day one. I've not been called out to the field, if you will, but I'm in the ER, so that's kind of the field.
All right. Thank you very much, not only for your service to our community in the ER and in emergency response, but also for your public testimony today. We truly appreciate it. Next up, we have Sean Williams. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to reference, and proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes.
Hello, co-chairs Hannon and Shragi. I want to say thank you for taking this topic up today. My name is Sean Williams. I'm speaking on behalf of myself and my family. I'll share with you that I have a few handguns, but I'm about to pick up a nice AR-15 and an AR-10 after the last year or two. It was just something, a decision that I made to move forward for my own safety. I want to acknowledge that I had no idea that so many gun control advocates actually owned a variety of guns. That is amazing and surprising to me, but not unexpected in, as far as testimony goes today. So I want to remind people, I know that I've been hearing on calls that, you know, they just can't figure out why we're visiting this issue. And I would like to share that I believe the reason we're visiting this issue right now is because during the pandemic, some might remember that all stores were required to shut down. And, you know, to some of us, we want to make sure, especially during times of crisis, that we have access to the kind of self-protections that we consider important. And I'll just wrap up by saying that I 150% support Bill number 136, and I want to say thank you to all the sponsors.
Thank you, Mr. Williams, for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Next up, question? No. Okay, very good. Next up, we have Sally Duncan. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation you wish to refer to, and proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes.
Thank you for the opportunity to speak. My name is Sally Duncan. I live in Two Rivers, Alaska. I am in full appreciation of this bill and the people who brought it together. Our firearm stores were closed during the pandemic. They never should have been. It was a very poor judgment on our government, and we need to be able to have that not happen again, and that is why this is being brought about. We need our Second Amendment protected, and I expect you to do it. I appreciate the time, and if there are any questions, I'll answer.
Not seeing any questions. Next up, we have Teresa Groves, and thank you, Ms. Duncan, for your testimony. We really appreciate it. Next up, we have Teresa Groves. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation, and proceed with your testimony, you will have 3 minutes.
Thank you. Can you hear me?
We can. Please proceed.
Wonderful. My name is Therese Groves. I am calling from Fairbanks, Alaska, District 33. I have been an Alaska resident for almost 30 years. And during that time, I took the concealed carry course a few years back by the renowned late Joe Nava. And like many others, we are safe, responsible Alaskans who value our independence and our ability to be sovereign individuals. I support this bill and I encourage all to support this bill as well. I believe that we do not need an increase of government control and that we are able to make prudent decisions. Gun stores are where honest people go. There are protocols already in place. Emergencies may be an appropriate time of need. So rather than further restrictions, we definitely encourage you for my household to support this bill. Thank you and have a great day.
Thank you, Ms. Groves. We really appreciate your testimony here today. Next up, we have James Squires. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation. Proceed with your testimony. You will have 3 minutes. Thank you.
Yeah, good afternoon. My name is James Squires. I am from rural Deltona. I live fairly remote. I've had multiple black bears try to come in the front door and a grizzly bear try to come in the back door. Firearms are a way of life out here. I have many firearms. When I put my pants on in the morning, there's a holster on my belt, and a sidearm goes into that holster when I step out my door. I've also been to Front Sight many, many years ago. I took a 4-day class out there, and it's just, you know, firearms are part of the way of life here in Alaska. I'm surprised no one has mentioned it, at least while I've been listening so far, but I'll direct you to Article 1, Section 19, the right to keep and bear arms. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. That's pretty clear language. But if that's not clear enough, it goes on to say the individual right to keep and bear arms shall not be denied or infringed by the state or a political subdivision of the state. So that's pretty crystal clear to me. I don't know why we have to put a cloud on shall not be infringed. But if that's not enough, let's look over here at Article 12, Section 5, and that's your oath of office. And in your oath of office, you're supposed to support and defend the Constitution. So while anybody would think that they need to restrict firearms, especially during the time of a disaster declaration, is just beyond me. So anyway, I support SB 136, and we need to move it off to the committee as quickly as possible. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Squires. Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Mr. Squires, for your testimony. I'm curious, the number of gun stores that I suspect you have to drive pretty far, but I don't believe you could probably buy ammo anywhere other than a gun store up there. Is that about right?
Yeah, unless we were to buy ammo off of each other, Representative McCabe, it's about 40 miles to the nearest town where there's a gun shop there.
So the gun shop in the nearest town, is that Delta?
Yes.
That gun shop is the only place to buy ammo in Delta?
Yep, unless I were to get some off of the neighbor.
So if you were running out of ammo and you had to protect yourself from the bears and stuff in an emergency of some sort, maybe the cops couldn't come or fish and game couldn't come, you'd go to that gun store to get ammo.
That is correct.
Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Squires. Next up, for public testimony, we have Mr. Gary Tyndall. If you could please put yourself on the record with your name, location, and any affiliation and proceed with your testimony, you will have 3 minutes. Thank you.
This is Gary Tyndall, North Pole, Alaska, representing myself, speaking in favor of Senate Bill 136. I think it reinforces our constitutional rights, as previous testimony just indicated, of our right to keep and bear arms and our responsibility when we do that. I'm surprised to see that we have to have this come up. It makes me think back in time that the only government I can think of that would have wanted to work otherwise, we got rid of about 250 years ago. I hope you will support 136 and pass it forward. And that's all I have to say, unless you have any questions.
Oh, thank you for your testimony. We really appreciate it, Mr. Tyndall. Next up, we have Arthur Duncan, please correct the pronunciation of your name, state your location, and any affiliation. Proceed with your testimony. You'll have 3 minutes. Thank you.
My name is Arthur Duncan, D-U-N-C-A-N. I'm representing myself. I live in Two Rivers, Alaska, which is about 30 miles outside of Fairbanks, and I'm calling in to support this SB 136, and I request that you vote for it. It reinforces our U.S. Constitution language and shows that we believe in it and support it. And that's what I have to say. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Mr. Duncan, and sorry to butcher your name. We had a little typo here, and it was displaying incorrectly. So my apologies, and thank you again for your testimony. We really appreciate it.
No problem, and you're welcome.
Very good. You have a wonderful day. That is everyone that I have signed up for public testimony. I'm just looking at the room again and looking online, and I'm getting the nod that we have gotten through everyone, and I will close public testimony at this time. All right. So that brings us to action on Senate Bill 136. Specifically, we've received a number of amendments. And we have an amendment number one from Co-Chair Hannon. Do we have a motion?
Move amendment number one.
Object.
We've got an objection from Representative McCabe. Co-Chair Hannon, would you please explain your amendment?
Well, the meat of this amendment is on page two and deals with the concealed weapons permit.
Brief at ease. Back on the record, sorry for the interruption. Would you please start again, Co-Chair Hannon?
So I move Amendment 1.
Very good. And we've got an objection from Representative McCabe to catch us up, and you were then explaining your amendment.
I will draw your attention to the bottom part of that amendment, the third clause, page 2, lines 5 through 8, that deal with the concealed carry permit section in the bill. I actually presuppose that most of you know that in Alaska, no one is required to have a concealed weapons permit, and the bulk of Alaskans who carry concealed do not have a permit from the state. My concern, as much of this bill does, it's setting up the opportunity, if you drop down further in the page, to sue if any of these things have happened. If you've not been able to, online 7, if, quote, there's been a refusal to accept an application for a concealed handgun permit. Now, in my mind, It's the earthquake in 2018, and DPS has shut down and is not accepting them. We've now put into statute that says you cannot do that, and by not processing and accepting my application, you may sue for 3 times your lawyer's fees and punitive damages. And I think that language is in there because when I met with the NRA, they explained this was a template bill that they're trying to push in all 50 states, and I don't think it works well in Alaska, and explicitly is setting us up to sue ourselves over something that 99% of Alaskans who are carrying concealed would never encounter. But someone who is litigious could set out to go, I'm going to, during an emergency when DPS is not processing, I'm going to purposefully set it up so that I can get punitive damages over something that's really a non-issue, because Alaska is not required. No one in Alaska that's an Alaskan has to have a concealed weapons permit. So that's the bulk of that motion.
Representative, thank you, Co-Chair Hannon. Representative McCabe, and then I saw a hand up from Representative McCarty.
Thanks, Co-Chair Schrage. So the concealed carry permit in Alaska is not required. Yep. It is, however, a higher level. You can still get a concealed carry permit. It takes some instruction from a an instructor, NRA instructor or whatever, and some shooting and some practice and that sort of stuff. All it really does in Alaska, for those that want to spend the sometimes close to $500 to get your concealed carry permit, is it allows you to buy a gun without the waiting period or the background check that's required, because you've already done the fingerprints, you've already gone through, it's not DPS, it's actually ATF. So you've actually gone through all that already. So I think that's what this is designed to do, is if you spend the money and spend the time and spend the effort to get a concealed carry permit and then you are denied, that is what this is designed to do. So I'm not sure, there seems to be some confusion here with the DPS thing.
I wasn't sure who.
Co-Chair Hannon.
I wasn't sure which agency currently was doing them, since for 25 years we haven't required them. But what this bill does is say, if you, the state, the agency, does not accept an application for a concealed weapons permit during an emergency declaration, I can sue. And it seems like an inappropriate place.
Follow up.
Follow up, and then we'll go to Representative McCarty. Thanks. And go for a second round for.
So I suspect that this suing portion is to get it in front of a judge. It's just to highlight or daylight or make more transparent. The judge can say you absolutely have no case. The it's not like it's a automatic fine. It goes to a judge. A civil suit goes to a judge. It goes in front of a judge. And then the judge makes that determination, if I'm reading this right. So the issue is not with DPS. It's not necessarily with the state, other than a local mayor that shuts down a gun store and says you cannot send the ATF the application for this person to buy a gun after he has spent all the time to do the concealed carry permit and everything else. So I might be reading it wrong. So
Line 7, page 2, okay. Refuse to accept an application to carry. Right? So it's not – if you already have one, you can exercise your concealed weapons permit. This is dealing with what – Line 5 is revocation, which, I mean, if the feds have say we've revoked your concealed weapons permit, but we can't do that during an emergency, that's strange. I have a separate amendment on dealing with that. But Line 7, where it says nobody can refuse to accept an application for concealed handgun, and this is all under things you cannot do during an emergency declaration, and any Alaskan who already has one can still exercise it during an emergency declaration. But let's just presume we are not in COVID times, but we are in earthquake response, and agencies aren't functioning for a period of time, day, week, month. And we've set it up that by you not accepting the application, it is a suable offense. And I think it is a frivolous red herring that doesn't match with Alaska's law or our access to guns.
So
good discussion. Just really quickly, I'd like to jump in here and moderate. Representative McCarty, same kind of line of discussion. Okay, then Representative McCarty, and then let's get back into it.
So through the chair, as I'm seeing this and what I personally experienced just recently in purchasing another gun, is that the system went down as I'm purchasing the gun. And so I paid the money that they had to hold the gun until the system went back up for me to get it a week later. It just took me a week to get it, come back. And that happened to be over Christmas. So for someone to fill out an application, you know, and for them to receive it, it's not denying them to fill out the application. And if there is a disaster of some sort, the systems are down, it's not suable because they have to respond right away, that there's events that take place that may delay the application processing, which is not a suitable thing. So I don't see a problem here, and I don't see a problem in the protocol of what I personally have experienced in the flow of that. And it wasn't during the disaster. It was, well, Christmas Eve. Maybe that's a disaster. But.
So I'm going to go to Representative McCabe in just a second. I mean, but before I do, I'm just going to quickly jump in myself. I think the question for me is, you know, I think of the COVID epidemic that we were just through, Department of Public Safety deals with the concealed handgun permits. They also do all the background checks that we do. And I think part of my concern, and I'm looking forward to further discussion on this, is, you know, Department of Public Safety was backlogged heavily on background checks for nurses, all sorts of critical functions that were essential during the pandemic. And I'm curious when, at the very beginning of the bill, it says that no governor, state agency, municipality, et cetera, can adopt a proclamation, regulation, ordinance, or even policy. I'm curious if the director of the Department of Public Safety says stop all non-essential background checks and activities so that we can prioritize getting teachers or otherwise into the system, are they now open to being sued, and not only sued, but sued for three times their attorney fees? I have some concern there. And anyways, wanted to get that into the conversation. We'll keep this going. I'd like to go to Josiah next, then McCabe, if that's all right, and then we'll keep going through. And I've got Representative Drummond as well. Josiah.
Thank you,
Representative Puckett.
No, excuse you, Mr. Co-Chair. In regards to the amendment, I don't have a CCP. I've got a bunch of firearms, but concealed carry permit. But in regards to some of the aspects as to why this might be important, I think there's a reciprocity clause between Alaska and a couple of states. I don't know exactly. Like I said, I'm not real familiar with the CCP program. But in an example, when you have to, I guess, catastrophize or throw a straw man out there as far as the discussion, if there is an emergency that's declared and the system is down for a number of months, I'm aware of folks that have pursued the concealed carry permit in anticipation to moving and all of that stuff. But being the amateur or being naive on the matter, and somebody brought up the discussion that in discussion with the folks carrying this bill that it was an NRA format bill. I'm wondering if we've got the folks online that testified during public testimony from the NRA, and if they could speak to some of these issues, because I'm not I'm not the professional on the matter. So.
Let's go to Ms. Klein if she's still online. Are you able to speak to this issue? Ms. Klein.
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Shragi, and through the chair to Representative Pakpak's question. To start with the concealed carry reciprocity, there are 38 states that recognize Alaska's concealed carry permit. And so while you do not have to have a concealed carry permit in the state of Alaska, 38 states also recognize it when you have gone above and beyond and gotten your concealed carry permit.
Does that answer your question, Representative
Puckett? Yeah, thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. And I guess drilling down to another level is that of those 38 states, there are probably some that require it, unlike Alaska. So there's a benefit for Alaska offering it at any time. I guess as far as
the processing, the background checks. I mean, I know when I go buy a firearm, it's NICS background checks that the FFL calls in and is approved within a matter of minutes or a couple of days at most. But can we get some understanding as far as that process for the concealed carry permit? What interface does the state agencies have with that if it is something that's subject to ATF oversight? I'd be curious to know.
Ms. Klein?
Yeah, I'm not sure if I'm clear on the question, Representative Pocketalk, through the chair. But what we saw across the country during the COVID-19 pandemic and other examples that was provided in written testimony is the pandemic exposed dangers of anti-firearms, anti-2A groups coming after Second Amendment rights and using the color of an emergency declaration to restrict the Second Amendment right, the right to self-defense. And while there have been comments that we don't need guns during pandemics or during emergencies, during heightened situations, I'd argue that's the exact opposite. During times of chaos and uncertainty, the right to self-defense is never more important.
Ms. Klein, are you able to speak to who conducts background checks for a concealed carry permit? Is that the State Department of Public Safety, or is that someone with the federal government that's doing background checks in the instance of a concealed carry permit?
I'd have to look into the specifics for the state of Alaska, but in order to purchase a firearm, you have to go through the universal background check, the NICS system.
All right. Let's continue on with the conversation. Let's go to Representative McCabe. Then I've got...
I'm wondering if the sponsor's office might have an answer to the, because it worked its way through the
Well, planet. So I led us down that path. Thanks, Co-Chair Shragi. I led us down that path. I kind of conflated the two. So you do need a local background check, fingerprints and stuff from DPS. Representative Hannon is right. For the concealed carry permit to buy a gun, it goes through the ATF, through the NICS system that they're talking about. And frankly, I'll just leave it there for now. I do have another comment, but I'll leave it for the.
Okay. Next up, I'm going to go to Representative Drummond, I believe, and then we're going to go to Representative Prox. Representative Drummond.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Disclaimer, there are guns in my household. I have had training, but I have never purchased a gun over the counter. And I'm just curious about Representative McCarty's reference to the system was down. Not having experienced this myself, I need to understand that when you went to buy the weapon over the counter at whatever store and the system was down and you had to wait for a week, what system is that that was down that kept you from buying that gun when you wanted to buy. And I hope that whoever you were gifting it to wasn't disappointed because they didn't get it and waited until Christmas Eve to buy it.
Representative McCarty, if you could answer that question.
Yeah, thank you to the chair. That the system was
NICS
system, and just prior to me purchasing it, the system was up and going, and someone prior to me purchased their gun, walked out of the store. But I was the fortunate person that the system went down at that time. And so for me, waiting a week is just, I had other things going on. And so that's what, took it a week. I could have come back after the Christmas, the weekend, the whole bit to get it. It just took a little longer. And the recipient of that gun was my kids were saying, Dad, go buy a gun for yourself. So.
Very brief follow-up, Representative Drummond, because I know we got a couple of add-on comments here from members.
So if I purchase a gun from a friend or somebody off the street or whatever, I don't have to go through this NICS system, in other words.
Let's go to – I believe –
I don't think so. I can answer.
Let's go to Representative McCabe. Let's go to Representative McCabe here.
I got a question that he might be able to answer.
Sure. Let's go to, Chairman. If McCabe indulges, let's go to Representative Puckettuck and then to Representative McCabe.
So earlier in the conversation, I was hearing Representative McCabe mention when you have a CCP permit, perhaps you get quote unquote streamlined through the NICS process. And I wonder if Representative McCarty had a CCP permit, how would that interplay with the NICS system being down? I don't know.
Yes, so that, through the chair. And
just really quickly, I'll note that we've been joined by Ms. Howell at Department of Public Safety. Thank you for making an effort to join us. You might just come to the table, as I suspect you will be called on a few times here. And sorry to interrupt you, Representative McCabe. Please continue.
So to answer Representative Drummond's question real quick is, if you go and buy a gun from another person that does not have a federal firearms license, an FFL, you do not have to go through any system. If you are buying a gun from a store or from a person who has an FFL, you will have to go through the ATF. Some places the system is on an iPad, and you just fill out all your information, you answer the questions, you hit submit, and it goes to the ATF, and then they make a phone call, and they say this guy is good or this guy is bad. If they don't have the iPad set up, which is a little expensive, you fill out the manual form at the FFL, and he gets all done, and he looks at it. He takes a copy of your driver's license. He writes down the serial numbers of the gun and all that sort of stuff. And then he calls the ATF. They have a special line, and they will do the background check and say, this guy's good or this guy's bad. Sometimes there is a mix-up with the names, or there is some reason that the ATF wants to delay. So they will tell the store owner, and I don't remember the exact term for it, but it's suspended or whatever, and then you got to come back 3 days later because it sometimes takes a little time, especially if they're backed up for whatever reason. So that's my understanding, having bought a few guns in the last couple years, of how it all works. So as far as the CCW, mine lapsed a number of years ago, and it was like 20 years ago, so I have no idea how they are doing it now, but I do know that there are classes offered, and you have to go get fingerprinted. That's all part of the class typically, and you have to take this CCW class, and mostly it's for reciprocity. But then there's also, it relieves you from having to do the ATF all the paperwork and all that through the ATF. So.
Thank you, Representative McCabe. Same topic, Representative Drummond, or a new topic?
Just a comment.
Quick comment.
There's a lot of alphabet soup things being thrown out here, like I'm going to have to look up NICS, FFL, CCW, et cetera, et cetera. So I would just appreciate at least the first time we encounter one of those that it be explained. Thank you.
This is a very on-brand comment, Representative Drummond, and I appreciate it. Hopefully we can get to some of those acronyms here in a moment. Representative Prox, I've got you up next on the queue.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. I believe the specific, am I correct, the specific topic of the amendment dealt with the concealed carry permit, not necessarily buying a firearm.
Correct.
And the concern was that I'm guessing some government agency would be refusing to process that permit as opposed to unable to process that permit. But perhaps Ms. Howell could help us clarify what's going on here.
So, yes, and I'd like to maybe, since Ms. Howell has just joined us recently, restate my question from earlier, because I believe Ms. Howell could probably opine on that. My concern articulated earlier is that during the pandemic we saw Department of Public Safety's ability to conduct background checks restricted, as well as the demand for background checks increased as we tried to get people into critical positions. And I know that created a backlog in various central background checks in our state. This bill, as I read it, would prohibit the Department of Public Safety in a public health emergency such as we just experienced from having a director of the department say, stop all non-essential activities that aren't background checks. Would this open you up then to lawsuit because you have created a policy that says we're not going to be processing concealed handgun carry permits at this time? And I guess just generally, does the department have a position on this? I'm curious. So if you can try to address Representative Prox and my questions and concerns there, and then maybe we'll tag some more onto that with Representative McCarty after you've had a chance to respond. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Kelly Howell. I'm the Special Assistant and Legislative Liaison for the Department of Public Safety. And the Department of Public Safety does administer the Concealed Handgun Permit Program for the state of Alaska. The department does not have an official position on this piece of legislation. I can tell you that if the bill were to pass and the department were required to continue processing concealed handgun permit applications to include the requisite background check, that we would comply with that requirement. I'm not an attorney, so I hesitate to answer any questions regarding the department's legal liability or responsibility in that respect. I can answer a couple of other questions that I heard posed regarding the what happens when someone actually applies for the background or the concealed handgun permit and what checks are conducted at that time, if the chair would like, or I can have people repose those at their.
Thank you, Ms. Howell. Appreciate that. Representative McCarty?
Yeah, thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. You were not here when the question or statement was made, and if you could differentiate the background check, and the statement that was made is during the COVID that the background check process was greatly challenged, and nurses, mental health workers, physicians, whatever it may be, were not able to get work because they had to get a background check, and that's what I heard from Co-Chair Shragi. But I also know there's a difference, and if you could clarify this, between the background check of HESS and the background check of public safety. And if I'm wrong, explain that, but if I'm right, help us to know what was flowing smoother than other background checks.
Michelle?
Yes, thank you, Representative McCarty, through the chair. The Department of Public Safety does process both state and national criminal history background checks, as well as the background checks that are required for licensing purposes. We do have some agencies, the Department of Health and Social Services, for example, has authorization to accept those background check requests. They are all run, however, through the Department of Public Safety. So we, as the state's criminal justice information authority, have that agreement with the Federal Bureau of Investigation to obtain those national criminal history background checks for licensing or employment purposes. And so all of those flow through us. There was some backlog. Some of that was coming from the agencies that were collecting the information to submit to DPS. I believe a lot of that was through HESP and the licensing agencies that collect that information. I don't have the statistics or the information to be able to give you probably a precise answer, but all of those do flow through the Department of Public Safety.
Follow up, Representative McCarthy.
So it's my understanding, very clear understanding, that people go down to the public safety to get a background check, and it was moving very quickly. But if they had to take it to HESS to do the continued background check, there were additional things that were required for those individuals as a nurse, mental health provider, whatever it may be. So were people that were trying to get firearm or concealed weapon permit able to do that more expeditiously than someone that's trying to get a job?
Representative McCarty, through the chair, I don't know that I could say that one way or the other. I think HESS, Department of Health and Social Services, had some other issues with some of their databases, so that could have been part of the holdup. And then depending upon the reason why the individual was requesting that background check, if it is just a state background check, that is something that someone can do right at the front counter. They get the results immediately. If it is a national criminal history background check, that is where you have to submit fingerprints, and it is run through the FBI, and it does take a little while longer. So it really does depend on the type of background check that the individual was requesting and the purpose that background check was needed for.
Ms. Howell, I'm going to jump in here for a second. am I correct that all forms of background checks were significantly delayed during the pandemic? And then second part of that question is, did the Department of Public Safety at all delay or slow down the processing of concealed handgun permits to help provide resources towards catching up on the backload of background checks? Thank you.
Chair Schrage, I think it is accurate to say that there was a delay in processing background checks simply because of individuals who were not at the work site, teleworking, either out on COVID leave perhaps. So given those reasons, there was some delay perhaps in processing background checks. I don't actually know the time frame of whether or not it delayed concealed handgun permit. The background checks required for concealed handgun permits. We can certainly get that information to the committee. I do know the department, you know, strives to, you know, turn things around quickly, especially if it's related to employment and someone's ability to start work. A lot of things changed in COVID, and I think some people were granted some exceptions or delays in having to turn in background checks. So hard to say, you know, exactly what was delayed and why, but I can certainly dig into more of those statistics and get you a written response if that would please you.
Thank you, Ms. Howell. Representative Puckettuck.
Thank you, Mr. Co-Chairman. So going to the specific lines in the amendment, 5 through 8, Section 6 says refuse to accept an application to carry a concealed handgun provided the application contains information required under Statute 18.65.710. So this isn't necessarily refusing or delaying to process a background check for a concealed carry permit. Under what circumstances would you refuse to accept an application when the applicant met all the requirements under Alaska statute, other than some random person who's processing an application for whatever reason that we may not even understand wants to deny an individual from getting a CCW? No logic, no law preventing them from getting a concealed carry permit.
Representative Puckettuck, through the chair, the department would not refuse to accept an application. We would certainly process that application to determine the person's eligibility for that concealed handgun permit, but we would not refuse to accept an application.
So just follow up, Mr. Co-Chairman. I think this subsection 6 speaks to when an individual is doing everything they can to follow the law, and they are following the law, and they're legal to have a CCW, and the state or whoever in the other section, governor, state agency, municipality, refuses to accept the application, the individual has done everything in their right and according to the law to request a CCW. And what this is saying is that if the state doesn't process it or accept it for any reason, the legal applicant has the right to, like Representative McCabe said, get it before a judge if that's the case, and get my paperwork processed. So I think it's beyond the point of the background check and all of that. I mean, this is under the assumption that I think that all of that stuff is met. So that's kind of my thoughts on this amendment.
Thank you, Representative Puckettuck. Representative McCabe.
So thank you, Co-Chair Schrage. So same thing here. This says suspending, or line 5, which we would be deleting with this amendment, says suspending or revoking a permit to carry. And it also says refusing to accept an application. It doesn't say anything about delays. So this whole idea that we, this sort of rabbit trail that we all merrily just went down with the delay because of the delay of background checks is really, really not part of this. And I agree. I think it you know, it's just saying that the guy has the right to bring it in front of a judge. So I think we beat this one to death. I'm a no on this amendment.
Very good. Final comments from Co-Chair Hannon before I think we call the question here.
Mr. Co-Chair, I'd like to ask Ms. Howell, when referencing the line 5, suspending or revoking a permit. When would or under what circumstances, conditions, statutes can a concealed weapons permit in Alaska be revoked?
Representative Hannon, through the chair, again, Kelly Howell for the record. I don't have the exact statute. I can dig in my statute book to find it for you. But essentially, someone does need to be eligible under federal law to possess a firearm. So if they had any disqualifying condition once they had that permit in their possession, if, for example, were convicted of a felony, that would federally prohibit them from owning firearms, and that would cause their concealed handgun permit to be revoked if it was active.
Follow up, Coach Hannon?
Nope, it's going to lead me right to the second amendment I'm going to offer.
I think we're just going, if it's all right with you, Representative Prox, I'd like to just go to the question. All right. Is the objection maintained?
It is.
Very good. And could the record secretary please call the roll?
Representative Popkatop?
No.
Representative Cross?
No.
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Co-Chair Hannon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Schrage?
No.
2 yeas, 5 nays.
With 2 yeas, 5 nays, amendment number 1 is not adopted. That brings us to amendment number 2. Co-Chair Hannon, do we have a motion?
I move amendment number 2. Object.
Object.
Purposes
We've
of
got
discussion.
An objection from Representative Drummond. Thank you for that. And Co-Chair Hannon, could you please explain your amendment?
Amendment number 2, if you go to page 2, line 11, would insert the word federal, two words, after state, where these are the disclaimers. You're prohibited by the state right now. The law, the bill as it's written, only says if you violate a state law, as Ms. Howell referenced. So there could be that you have a federal restriction, and that's not addressed in here. So right now, even if the feds say you can't have a gun under this bill, the state can't do that.
Very good. Discussion on amendment number 2. I've got
an objection.
Yep, we're in discussion of the amendment now, Representative McCarty. I've got Representative McCabe, and then we'll go to you, Representative McCarty. Representative McCabe.
Thank you. So I'm curious, and I don't know the answer to this question. I think that the state laws probably include felonies. I mean, they include federal laws. In other words, if you this section does not apply to the possession of a firearm, blah, 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 from a person who is legally possessing a firearm or other weapon under state or federal law. You're going to have to explain this amendment to me. Does not apply to the possession of a firearm, accessory, ammunition, or other weapon by a person who is prohibited from legally possessing a firearm, accessory, ammunition, or other weapon under the state law. So the states are the ones that regulate possession, not the feds. So the state, in other words, that's why we go to the state DPS, right, for the background check and everything else. So I'm not legally allowed to carry a firearm. It's because the state says I'm not legally allowed to carry a firearm. And it could certainly be based on some violation of a federal law, but it's still the state that regulates that.
Let's go to Ms. Anderson from the bill sponsor's office, if we could. Ms. Anderson, would you like to respond to this line of questioning from Representative McCabe?
So for the record, Michaela Anderson, Chief of Staff to Senator Myers, the sponsor of this bill. More general, but it is our understanding that the state does take federal law into consideration, but that there was a similar amendment that was never offered on the Senate side that was basically this language, and it was not offered after much discussion because there are legal opinions where if this was to be put in, it would override any legislation that has been passed by the legislature in past years, including it was in the tens, but we passed a gun legislation that basically said that if there was a federal, and this is all paraphrasing, but if there was a federal ruling that we would not, that we would maintain our state's rights, and that by putting this federal, that would override those pieces of legislation that have passed the legislature in the past. So we do not consider this a friendly amendment.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Anderson. Appreciate those comments and that insight. Ms. Howell, are there federal laws that would prohibit someone from owning a weapon or firearm that is not redundant with state laws or in Alaska? Are there provisions that in federal law that would prevent someone from owning a firearm where they would not be prevented by state law?
Kelly Howell again for the record. I am talking a little outside of my wheelhouse here. This is really a question I think better posed to the Department of Law. The state does, federal law does supersede state law, and if someone is federally prohibited, they would be prohibited by state as well. There are some laws dealing with misconduct involving weapons, and that's, in the statute book. But again, the federal law, if someone's federally prohibited, they would not be eligible under state law either.
Okay, very good. Further discussion on amendment number 2. Representative McCarty.
Thank you, through the chair. I just want to reiterate, and I'm going to use the word, sovereignty of the state. And in the language already, it says the state law, so the sovereignty of the state, we are fighting for our recognition of sovereignty, but we don't disregard the federal, and that's already in place. So I think that, and then we heard from the discussion from the other body, that they've looked at this and it causes confusion, if not potential of, I'm going to, triangulation, I use that word, the state doesn't respond, so I'm going to go to the federal because I didn't like the answer from the state. It's actually a synergy of rules that exist right now. So I don't agree with this amendment.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Chair Shargi. So you can see a little bit of the byplay in here by the fact that each state issues either a CCW or they don't issue. They're a shall issue, they're a may issue.
CCW, Representative McCabe.
Concealed carry,
weapon.
Yeah. So they either, it's the state statutes that sort of regulate whether or not they can issue a permit or not. And it's the state that regulates it. Yes, the state checks, and I think that's what the background check is for. The state would check to see if you got a felony from another state or even a misdemeanor or some sort of a conviction from another state, as I understand the way the background check goes. So I think the feds seem to have left this whole thing in the state's hands. So I'm not for this amendment either. I think it would go a bit of a ways towards creating an issue in here that was never intended.
Further discussion from committee members? And it was Representative Drummond who objected. She has stepped out of the room for a moment.
I'll object.
I'll assume that she maintains her objection, and Representative McCabe adds one for good measure. With that, would the record secretary please call the roll?
Representative Drummond? Not present. Representative Pocketock?
No.
Representative Prock?
No.
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Co-Chair Hannon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Froggy?
No.
One yay, five nay.
One yay, five nays. Amendment number 2 is not adopted. That brings us to amendment number 3 from Co-Chair Hannon. Would you like to move amendment number 3?
I move amendment number 3.
And I'll object for the purposes of discussion. And would you please explain your amendment, Co-Chair Hannon?
I need a brief at ease.
Brief at ease.
put it on the top.
Back on the record. All right. I believe we were on amendment number 3. We've got an objection from myself for discussion. And Co-Chair Hannon, could you explain amendment number 3 to the committee, please?
Amendment number 3 would add a new subsection and then renumber accordingly. But we would insert in there this new subsection to specify and clarify that if a municipality already had ordinances about guns, hours that you could shoot, you can't shoot on the roadway, whatever was in place before the disaster, would still remain in place. It's my understanding in conversations with the NRA and the activists pushing this, the lobbyists, I don't think it came from the sponsor's office, that their goal is to make sure nothing is stood up in an emergency order that prohibits it, but they said absolutely everything that's in place prior to an emergency still is in place. So whatever your local ordinances and policies about gun use would remain in place. And I want that clarified.
Representative McCarty, kicking off the discussion.
Yeah, thank you. Through the chair, Representative Hannon, that this bill in totality is saying that if there's a disaster of such, that you can't make up rules that shut down businesses that sell guns or ammunition and stuff to operate. And it has the appearance that this amendment is doing a paradoxical reversal of the intent of the bill.
Further discussion or first opportunity to Co-Chair Hannon should she want to respond?
It is not the intent, and I believe it, when you read it, that it says on line 4 of the amendment draft, or a policy that's in effect in the state when a disaster emergency is declared. And so I want to affirm in the bill that if you have a local ordinance about where guns can be fired, or hours of firing, or shooting off of in a neighborhood, that those all remain even during an emergency.
Follow-up, Representative McCarty. Thank you.
So I appreciate you clarifying that. So would it be a conceptual amendment to say pre-existing orders so that it makes it clear that an order can't be made in the midst of a disaster, but it's a pre-existing rule, statute, order, policy of an area?
Well, that's through the chair. That's why they chose in effect when a disaster emergency is declared. I skipped the clause in the state or a municipality. But these policies are in effect when a disaster emergency is declared. So they're already in effect and they stand.
Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. So let me get this clear. We have an earthquake in Juneau. The bears, dozen bears, however many live in the city, are running around. There is dogs. It could be dogs. You know, people's houses are damaged. They can't get to their animals. It's been a day or two, and it's 10 o'clock at night, and there's a city ordinance here that says you can't shoot a gun. Or maybe there's an ordinance that says you can't shoot a gun in town. So you're saying, I think, with this amendment that if your bear's coming towards you, and there's a city ordinance that says you can't shoot a gun, then you wouldn't be able to shoot the bear?
Co-Chair Hannon? Just
Representative McCabe.
I mean,
you're not honestly asking if a city in Alaska has a law that says you're under threat of an animal and you can't defend yourself? That there is no ordinance that says that. But it does say you can't shoot off the roadway in Juneau. Well, actually, there's an exception of distance from roadway for shooting because during duck hunting season, the Mendenhall wetlands falls within the narrow constraints of two roadways. So there's a carve-out that says you can hunt and draw weapons and shoot during duck season in the Mendenhall wetlands, even though it's too close to either road for otherwise shooting from a road distance. Now, what I don't want is in an emergency, do people think no rules apply and I can just shoot because I thought I heard my neighbors out there or I thought I heard somebody coming?
Representative McCabe.
Thanks. So, I mean, I was just kind of funning with you a little bit, but here's the deal. The very first part of this bill, Section 1, says, may not issue or adopt an order, proclamation, regulation, ordinance, or policy. So all this bill is saying is that they may not issue any new orders, proclamations, regulation, ordinance, or policies. It doesn't really, I don't really think that this, in fact, this amendment is kind of bordering on dilatory because it doesn't even really fit with the bill, if you ask me. So I'll be a no on this one. Thanks.
Further discussion from committee members on amendment number 3. I see Representative McCarty processing over there, but maybe no question.
Well,
no, I thought you might. Okay, Representative McCarty.
So see the language in line 3, the section do not supersede an order, proclamation, regulation, ordinance, or policy that is in effect in the state or municipality when a disaster emergency is declared. And it's tied with, you know, the now, and the concern is some of the decisions of the now has thwarted the ability of purchasing guns, ammunition, whatever it may be, of an industry that exists. And I still am wondering, what I heard from Representative Hannon is that it's referring to past proclamations, regulations, policies, rules, statutes that exist already on the books, that those still pertain in law, those can't be changed in sense. Is that what I'm hearing you say? If that's the case, then it does seem to fit that after supersedes a pre-existing law, so you're not changing laws that are already on the books. That's what I'm grappling with.
We've got Representative Prox in the queue. Let's go there and then maybe go back to Co-Chair Hannon for any follow-up comments. Representative Prox.
Thank you, Chair Shragi. I guess if I understand Representative Hannon's concern, if there was a ordinance against discharging firearms within a city, which there might be, I don't live within a city, so I don't know exactly what's, you know, in Fairbanks or Anchorage or wherever. But if there is one, the intent of this amendment is to say that ordinance can continue. You can't start shooting inside the city just because there's an emergency. On the other hand, within the context of the whole bill, I think I agree with Representative McCabe that this is unnecessary. This bill does not give a municipality a power to impose a prohibition against shooting firearms in the first place. It didn't just because there's an emergency.
Go ahead.
If there is an emergency and the city wanted to impose a restriction, they'd have to wait until the emergency is over, the declaration is over. But I don't think that this amendment is necessary to accomplish that.
Representative McCarty.
Thank you to the chair, and thanks for kind of redirecting the flow. And I have been on the national disaster team for the Red Cross. I have dealt with disasters. And one of the big disasters, I was down at the LA riots, and there was National Guard with no ammunition for 3 days. And there was craziness that was going on there. And so, you know, the rules all change. And appreciate your sharing your thoughts to that. And I think that I'm going to go with a no.
Coacher Hannon, any thoughts
here?
No,
go ahead and vote.
Okay, let's call the roll. If the record secretary could please call the roll here.
Representative McCabe.
No.
Representative Drummond.
Pass.
Representative Popsipok.
No.
Representative Crock.
No.
Representative McCarty.
No.
Representative Drummond?
Pass.
Co-Chair Hannon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Sprague?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Two yay, five nay.
All right. With two yay, five nay, amendment number three is not adopted. That brings us to amendment number four. Co-Chair Hannon, do we have a motion?
I move amendment number four.
Object.
We've got an objection from Representative McCabe. Co-Chair Hannon, could you please explain your amendment?
So on page one, line five, after Alaska Statute 2623020, inserting the phrase, unless necessary to maintain public order. So LA riots and they institute a curfew. LA institutes the curfew. Anchorage, earthquake, you institute a curfew and you're saying you can't be out there. So that's a new proclamation, even the emergency war, during an emergency. It's not restricting just weapons, but saying that you have to be inside. And I want to make sure that we have the ability at local governments responding to emergency disasters to maintain public order.
Representative McCabe.
This entire bill is directed at local governments that overstepped their bounds. It started with Ray Nagin in New Orleans. So this language would totally negate and neuter what the bill is intended to accomplish, which is to allow us as citizens to keep our rights to protect ourselves. And part of those rights, because we don't have one policeman for every citizen, and during some sort of a natural disaster, they may not be able to get to where you are. And an armed society is a polite society. So if they know, the criminals, the gangs, whoever we're talking about, that you might be armed, they are much less likely to go after you in some sort of situation. They know the cops can't get to you. They've seen the Egan that's all torn up, and they know the cops are on the other side, or the majority of them are. They know you might have a gun. So they're less likely to try to break into your house. So that's what this bill is designed to do. This amendment would completely neuter it, and I'm a no for that reason.
Further discussion from committee members on amendment number four?
With the bears, no, I don't have again.
Without further discussion, I'm going to ask the record secretary to, I assume the objection is maintained. Record secretary, could you please call the roll on amendment number four?
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Katak?
No.
Representative Kroc?
No.
Co-Chair Hannon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Sprague?
No.
Two yay, five nay.
I think that was two yay, five nay, I believe.
Yes.
Thank you very much. With two yay, five nay, amendment number four is not adopted. That brings us to conceptual amendment number one by myself, Co-Chair Sragi. I'm going to move amendment number one.
Object.
And we've got an objection from Representative Prox. I'm going to turn to myself to quickly explain this amendment. Conceptual amendment number one, page two, lines 17 through 25, it deletes this material. This would have the effect of doing two things. One, it would remove the ability for a membership organization to sue for the purposes of this bill. The second thing that it would do is it would remove subsection D, which allows for the prevailing plaintiff to recover the greater amount of actual economic damages or punitive damages in the amount of three times the plaintiff's attorney fees, court costs, and attorney fees. So the reason I'm offering this amendment is I fully support the intent of the bill, as has been indicated to me by the NRA, the lobbyists, and those in the Capitol who support this bill of ensuring that Alaskans continue to maintain their access to firearms, to ammunition, to shooting ranges, et cetera. It is my understanding through conversations with stakeholders that, frankly, these protections already exist, as has been demonstrated in a number of court cases. However, the intent of this bill is to further clarify and reinforce that a municipality may not restrict those rights or access to those, again, firearms, ammunition, gun ranges, et cetera. The part of the bill that I absolutely cannot support, however, is allowing to sue for damages. We already have a means for enforcing the law. I think that we have seen that a number of times in our history. We saw that in California, where some of these restrictions were put in place. It was taken to court, and it was ruled that, in fact, citizens do have those rights and that those restrictions were illegitimate. I think the idea, however, that we're going to give organizations as well as individuals the ability to sue for not just their damages, but to then add on to that up to three times those damages is unnecessary. I also understand that in statute currently, we have Section 917.020 on punitive damages, which already allows for punitive damages to be put in place. I find, frankly, Section D to be excessive. I won't be able to support this bill either in committee or on the floor with these provisions, and that is the reason I'm offering conceptual amendment number one. Now into discussion, we'll go to Representative McCabe.
Thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. So you're misreading this, I believe. Let's back up a little bit to C. A person may bring civil action in Superior Court if the person is adversely affected by a violation of A of this section and the person is qualified under the state law to possess a firearm accessory, ammunition, or other weapon, or is a membership organization consisting of two or more individuals. So what this says to me is I got an NRA sticker in my window or on my truck, and the cop, the Barney in the little small town, comes to my house, knocks on the door, and goes in my house and feels that he has the authorization without a warrant, without the other protections, to try to confiscate my guns strictly because I'm an NRA member, or it could be any other gun rights or something like that. So doesn't necessarily say what you think it says. If you read that, I think it adds teeth to this bill. It will make the mayor and the sheriff or the cop in the local town think twice about taking those kinds of punitive actions. All this really does is lock up the back door that they might want to go down, and it gets it in front of a judge. That's all it does. If I were to, this happened to me and I brought suit, I'd have to think twice too, because if I lost, I'd have to pay for the attorney. So, you know, that's all this is saying. It doesn't necessarily say, here's your ticket, city of Big Lake or city of Houston. Here's your ticket because you did this to McCabe. You get to pay $1,500 and his attorney's fee. Doesn't say that. All it says is you get to put it in front of a judge. That's my opinion, and I'm sticking to it.
Very good.
So I'll be a no.
Representative Drummond, and then I thought I saw someone to the right.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. And thank you, Representative McCabe, for saying what you did, because my reading of what this says right now is a person may bring a civil action, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, and the person is qualified, item one, a membership organization. Okay. Is that person a corporation, or are we missing three words here? A member of, in between the number two and the letter A on line 17. Because what you just said, Representative McCabe, was that somebody, you theorized that somebody could come after you because you were a member of the NRA. And that's not my reading of the way this bill is drafted right now and the way it passed the other body. I am reading this as, and it says or. It doesn't say the person is, this says to me that a corporation or an organization, never mind line 15 and 16, this says to me that the NRA could bring an action under this section of this bill, the way it's written. Thank you.
Maybe ask AV.
Yes, and I would note for the committee that we have just been joined by Mr. Andy Miller, Assistant Attorney General at the Department of Law, so we do have Department of Law online in addition to Department of Public Safety, should any committee members have questions. And then Representative McCabe, I believe you asked that we go to Ms. Klein at the NRA to respond to this question or topic. All right, let's do that. Let's go to Ms. Klein. If you could please re-put yourself on the record and address this line of conversation. Thank you.
Yes, thank you, Co-Chair Shragi. Again, for the record, Avine Klein, State Director for the National Rifle Association. The United States Supreme Court has recognized an organization's ability to have standing to bring suit on behalf of their members under Article 3 of the United States Constitution. By allowing this recourse for violating the law is essentially ineffective because it can't be enforced. That is why this provision of the bill is so important. Litigation is expensive, and organizations like the NRA bring suit on behalf of our members, just like we did in California for an ordinance that said firearms-related businesses were not essential. That was upheld by a three-judge panel of the Ninth Circuit. So this enables our organization to bring suit on behalf of our members. It also makes it so that that individual isn't bearing the cost, or that mom-and-pop shop that was shut down. It provides them the protections and allows us to do what we do for our members, and that's to represent their interests and protect the right to keep and bear arms.
Ms. Klein, can you speak to why three times the amount of attorney fees, court fees, or otherwise are appropriate, whereas I believe there are many, many, many laws in place restricting the actions of governments, municipalities, states that do not have provisions for private parties to sue for such an amount?
Yes, Co-Chair Shragi, thank you for the question. The right to keep and bear arms is a fundamental constitutional right protected by not only the United States Constitution, but the Constitution of the State of Alaska. And allowing three times recovery is there because if you violate a fundamental right, well, it deserves the recourse and the punishment of three times for violating that fundamental right.
Okay, very good. And I'm not seeing anyone jumping at the queue, so I would like to next go to the Department of Law. I'm glad that they were able to join us. Thank you, Mr. Miller, for working to get online for us. Mr. Miller, can you speak to me about existing instances in state law where we allow a prevailing plaintiff to recover amounts in this manner or on this level? Thank you, Mr. Miller.
Co-Chair Shragi, for the chair, is Andy Miller, Assistant Attorney General of the Department of Law. In response to your question, I would have to get back to you on specific places in statute that may spell out an amount of this amount. In the civil rules in Alaska, there are certain provisions for recovering attorney fees, and they don't go to this extent, but I don't know if there's statute for certain circumstances where there could be attorney fees at this moment. I can get back to you if you'd like.
Thank you, Mr. Miller. Next up, we're going to go to Representative McCarty, and then I see Representative Prox in the queue.
Thank you. Through the chair, Mr. Miller, I see in this language here is kind of a deterrent type of language. But the question is like, if a suit did happen – and it did not go in the favor of the, I guess you say plaintiff, so the municipality or something of such, then would this automatically take place
that the person business would not have to do a counter suit, but yet it would just be automatically recognized?
Through the chair, Representative, I need to look at the language a little better myself. My understanding is you'd have to prevail to get the fees, if that's what you're asking. If you didn't, I guess I'm not quite sure I understand the question. I'm sorry.
Let's go back to Representative McCarty to maybe restate his question.
So you're the defendant, and you prevail. So does that mean that you automatically then have the municipality or whatever entity, they have to now reimburse you? You don't have to go through a whole countersuit process. If this was to take place, that you would be recognized for damages of attorney fees and whatever the economic dynamics.
Through the chair, Representative McCarty, I think that's something that's not. This provision is. My understanding was that this is if you prevailed as the plaintiff, and I don't think it impacts. I look closer. I don't think it impacts if you're the defendant and you were successful. I read this as if you were the plaintiff, and that's for the damages. It's kind of what the award would be, and not just attorney fees, but just what the award in general. I don't think this has any impact on the outcome for a defendant.
Thank you. I used the wrong word, so you're correct.
Yeah, Representative McCarty, any follow-up there? Okay, we're good. We're going to go to Representative McCabe next.
So maybe I can rephrase this for you, Mr. Miller. So do you have the bill in front of you?
I do, Representative McCabe.
Okay, so line 21, it says may recover, and then it gives the greater of the amount. So I think this allows the judge to reduce this if he wants to. Would that be a correct statement?
Through the chair, Representative McCabe, that's how I would read it too. By the may, there's three different things that could be recovered, and I don't see any particular explanation of how or why, but it doesn't say shall recover. So I would keep it at yes. That's something. That's what the award could entail.
Follow up, Representative McCabe.
Thanks.
So. I'd just like to maybe comment as we kind of get back to the merits of this, let's say, disincentive to municipalities or governments from restricting these, what I don't dispute is very important rights. I do see this as a disincentive for municipalities or governments putting in place emergency ordinances that would restrict Second Amendment rights. I do also think, however, that it creates an incentive for those to litigate the state in the hopes of recovering exorbitant attorney fees. And I guess I'm curious if that is how we want to approach our laws and enforcing our laws. Why don't we have something that allows the defense to not just recover their fees, but recover fees plus costs above and beyond that as a discouragement from running nefarious court cases. So all that is to say, I think there's, again, I strongly support our Second Amendment rights. I strongly support ensuring that those rights are protected. I don't support, however, creating these perverse incentives that may exist otherwise elsewhere in state law, but certainly sounds, based on the testimony from Department of Law, that this is not a common thing. I can't support these novel mechanisms to discourage governmental entities from breaking laws that they're already supposed to be upholding. So with that, I'm not actually seeing any further discussion from committee members. Representative McCabe.
Thanks, Co-Chair Shragi. So and yet in our laws, there's all kinds of different penalties for both civil and criminal events. And I think what this is saying is if the city or the attorney, or not the attorney, but the cop or the mayor goes down this road, they're going to get penalized just like any other If you or I went did something wrong, we would get a fine, parking ticket or DUI or any of those kinds of things. We get a fine for it. There's also some civil penalties for any number of different violations of civil law that a judge may impose. And so I'm pretty sure that that's what this is designed to do. And I think that I'll be a no on that, but I'd like to take a brief at ease.
Yeah, maybe just very quickly before we go to a brief at ease, I'd just like to note that line 20, it's notwithstanding Alaska Statute 917.020F-H, which lays out the punitive damages that already exist. But let's leave it there just briefly. Let's go take an at ease, and we'll be back on the record in a moment. At ease. Item of housekeeping. Record Secretary has asked that we restate this amendment as amendment number 5 as opposed to conceptual amendment number 1. So if you would just cross out conceptual and mark this as number 5 for reference, the Record Secretary would appreciate that. And with that, further discussion on what we are now calling amendment number 5. Not seeing any further Representative Prox.
I'm sorry. Was it discussed that the organization had to be adversely affected?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes, that was good. Representative Prox. Further discussion from committee members? Very good. Not hearing any. I'm going to ask the Record Secretary to please call the roll.
Representative Prox?
No.
Representative McCarty?
No.
Representative McCabe?
No.
Representative Drummond?
Yes.
Representative Potkatok?
No.
Co-Chair Hannon?
Yes.
Co-Chair Froggy?
Yes.
3 yay, 4 nay.
3 yays, 4 nays. Amendment number 5, as we're calling it, is not adopted. That brings us to the underlying bill. Is there further discussion on SB 136? Not seeing any. We are going to take a brief at ease. Nay is going to recess to the call of the chair.
And Mr. Chairman.
We are recessed. In. Thank you for jumping back online. We are on the underlying bill SB 136. And Co-Chair Hannon, do we have a motion?
Mr. Chairman, I move to. Hold on. Need it.
Yep, brief at ease. On the record, I believe we're ready with a motion now.
Mr. Chairman, I move Senate Bill 136, version 32-LS0856/B with individual recommendations and attached fiscal note from committee.
I'm going to object just for the purposes of discussion. I noted a few moments ago or before we recessed that I cannot support the bill in its current form. I have, however, talked with the bill sponsor's office, and they've indicated support for removing the punitive damages in the next committee of referral. I'm optimistic that the bill sponsor will work with our office to accomplish that change while retaining the right for groups to be able to bring action. All of that said, I am willing to continue this through the legislative process today and vote to move this bill out of committee. But again, would like to express my strong desire that the sponsor's office work with us to enact that change in the next committee. With that, I am going to remove, actually, I'm going to maintain my objection, as I think members would like to vote on this bill. With that, is there any further discussion from committee members? Not seeing any, I'd like to ask the record secretary to call the roll.
Representative Potkatuk?
Yes.
Representative Cross?
Yes.
Representative McCarty?
Yes.
Representative McCabe?
Yes.
Representative Drummond?
No.
Co-Chair Hannon?
No.
Co-Chair Sproggy?
Yes.
5 yay, 2 nay.
With 5 yays, 2 nays, SB 136 is moved from committee with attached fiscal notes. And with that, and no other business to come before the committee, we are adjourned at 4:14 p.m.